This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
Half past three, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. With Derek Johnson, I'm Nick Schwert. Thanks for hanging out with us on a lovely Tuesday here in Lawrence, Kansas. Late Night in the Fog was on Saturday. I would guess that it is the biggest, the best, the grandest late night that KU has ever had, and they continue to set the bar for themselves every single year as we welcome on Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World. Matt, I was joking yesterday. I've been to probably a dozen late nights, and I was thinking back to the ones I went to in the late 90s and comparing it to what we saw on Saturday. They're not even the same event anymore, right? Like, it's an extravaganza right now that Kansas and maybe a few other programs across the country can match. And I just don't know where you go from here. Like, how do you continue to top yourself?
Yeah, no, it's not even close to the same event. I mean, for one, you know, it's definitely become, you know, that concert aspect of it has become the most important part and what gets everybody the most hype. I mean, the stands were even thinning out and emptying during the scrimmage portion. I mean, it was like the people that came this year didn't even stick around, all of them, to watch the basketball, which is what it used to be about. And then even that, I think, you know, the sort of the advent of the skits being able to be pre-recorded and filmed and then shown on the video board. I mean, back in the day, you know, you used to have guys actually doing skits live right there on the court. I mean, I can't remember exactly who it was, but I think it was Kirk Heinrich, was David Letterman. He had a top 10 list one year. I think Nick Collison was Bobby Knight one year and chucked a chair across the court or something like that. I mean, you know, those types of things were a lot more, I guess, real time maybe. They were right there in front of you, and so it brought in that that aspect of, I don't know, improv a little bit. You know, you don't know how many times they had to do a certain take or refilm or whatever, re-record something when they're making those video productions. And that's, there's nothing wrong with that, but they're usually pretty flawless and they come off pretty clean. Whereas in front of a live audience, 16,000 people there watching you rattle off your top 10 list and chuck the card like Letterman used to do and all that stuff. I mean, you know, there was something, I don't know, something that maybe made a little bit more of a real connection between the event and the crowd. And I think that's been a little bit lost. It's not that they're less entertaining. I mean, the Devontae's thing between two hoops was hilarious. I love the Remember the Titans skit. I love the Wolf of Wall Street thing. I mean, I thought those were great. They just, that stuff used to happen right in front of you instead of on the video board. And I don't blame them. You know, use your video board. You've got the technology. You've got Rock Chalk Video that does a great job producing stuff. So, you know, why not do that? But it definitely takes some of the charm away. And I think you're right. I mean, I think the only place you go from here is maybe making it a little shorter. I think Bill Self mentioned that after. He said it was a little long for him. And I, you know, I think if you're not going to do those types of skits on the court and you're just going to keep it to the videos, I don't know that you need to traipse everybody out there for these weird dances. I don't know that the junior class needs to dance, and then the sophomore class needs to dance, and then the seniors need to dance. I mean, I don't think that needs to happen. You know, it didn't exactly happen that way this year, although I think it did with the women's team. So, you know, maybe trim it a little bit, but no complaints. I mean, I'm with you. I think it was as big and grand and exciting, and just it was a total party in there, and anybody that showed up definitely got their money's worth.
Okay, so tell me how this works when you're covering a Lil Yachty concert. Did it make you feel reinvigorated? Did it make you feel more youthful than you actually are, or did it have the adverse effect? Did it make you feel kind of old?
No, youthful, for sure.
Okay, good.
I was not looking forward to it just because we might have talked about it a little bit last week. When I checked out some of his work online, on YouTube or whatever, It was kind of, you know, I like rap a lot. It's nothing against the genre at all. I mean, I just wasn't that impressed with his stuff. I was like, how they're gonna bring this to the field house? Yeah. And then he absolutely killed it. I mean, he could not have been better, in my opinion. I thought the guy, his songs hit, They were terrific. They had the place going and jumping and bouncing, and he was a big part of that. He went into the crowd, as you know. He walked out along Crest Row. I mean, just the guy gave it all he had while he was there, and that's all you ask. I mean, the guy probably got paid handsomely to be there, and it was cool for him to show that he was actually enjoying being there and not just going through the motions.
Well, when you see a guy like that, and like yourself, and a lot of people who are covering it, and I'm sure a lot of fans who were there who aren't necessarily in his age demo, you kind of see this and you go, okay, well, I'm not the intended audience, right? The intended audience is these players. The intended audience is these recruits. And that kind of speaks to the entirety of late night. Like, everything that late night is about is geared towards the players and geared towards the recruits. And while the fans show up and show out, they're more a part of the act than they are a part of the audience, right? Because when recruits see that these fans are showing up to a scrimmage and to a concert for nothing other than to just support their program and be a part of whatever has the name of Kansas basketball on it, like, that speaks volumes to these recruits. And you just see an event like that on Saturday, and you can count the programs across the country on one hand who can do something like that. And in the case of that, like, having a guy, an artist who these kids, like, they listen to and they look up to, like, it may seem trivial to guys like us and people who don't follow it, but those kids are going to go on a bunch of different recruiting visits, and they're not going to see anything like that anywhere else.
Totally agree. I mean, it's crazy to think that a kid's decision on where he's going to play his college basketball for a year or two or 4 years could come down to, well, I really like seeing Lil Yachty there. I thought that was awesome. But I think it could. I mean, I maybe not in every instance, but I think in some cases that could end up being the deciding factor, or at least part of the deciding factor that leads the kid to pick Kansas. So if that's the game, if that's what you have to do, then that's how you have to play it. I mean, I mean, Lil Yachty, as much as Bill Self admitted to being a fan and wanting to join his fan club and all that after the event, I'm sure beforehand he was like, who? Okay, sure. If that's what the kid's like, let's do it, you know? So it's just another indication of how, on top of everything KU is. I mean, they know how to host kids. They know how to be relevant. They know how to make their program sing and buzz and pop on every level. It's not just about winning 30 games a year and making a run at the Final Four every year, which they do. It's about everything. It's about, again, making it relevant with people of all ages, really. I mean, that's the beauty of Kansas basketball, I think. As much as the older crowd sitting in there on Saturday night was probably not really feeling Lil Yachty, there's plenty of that thing and that whole event, I should say, that still celebrates the grand history of Kansas basketball and is something that those types of people can relate to too. So that's a perfect example. I mean, that's exactly what it's become in a nutshell, and I think that's where it's going to go. If anything, I think KU is going to just have to keep getting bigger with it. I mean, it's very well known that Drake ends up going to Kentucky a lot. That's his spot among probably 346 others. You know, kind of a bandwagon guy. That's his reputation. But he is a Kentucky guy. I mean, he sticks with them pretty well. So, you know, Tech Nine was nice. They did well to get a guy that people around here know. And now Lil Yachty was probably another step forward. I mean, that's more of a internationally known kind of guy. So the real thing is, you know, who's next year? I mean, that's the exciting part. I mean, it could be a real big name next year. And that's not to say that Lil Yachty's not, but you know, you can definitely go another level or two. And it'll be interesting to see if that's what they choose to do or try to do.
We're talking to Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World here, New FM 101.7, 1320 KLWN. I'm not going to ask you about the scrimmage specifically because I am of the belief that nothing that happened at that scrimmage has any impact on this season whatsoever. But with that being said, I do think just watching them on the court, and you just kind of, your mind starts to race towards the season and what they're going to look like and how they're going to play. Billy Preston and LeGerald Vick seem to me to be the two most important guys on this team in terms of finding out what their identity is going to be, because With Preston, if he can be a guy who can be a low post threat, then all of a sudden you do have the luxury of playing the typical three out, two in look that Bill Self has pretty much utilized the entirety of his career other than the last couple of seasons. If that doesn't work, then you have to count on LeGerald Vick to be that stretch four. Can he replicate in any way what Josh Jackson did a year ago, guarding the other guys four and still being that athletic wing-type player? I really do look at those two guys as being important in terms of finding out what this team's identity is going to be.
Well, there's no doubt, and you saw that out there during the scrimmage. I mean, even though it wasn't an indication of how they're going to play or what they're going to do or anything like that, I think you could see the potential for both of those guys. I mean, Billy Preston looked pretty comfortable. He's got a lot of work to do to be able to play for Bill Self, to be able to play the way that Self wants him to play, not only where but how and all of that. But the LeGerald Vick was absolutely the guy that stole the show for me. And I thought Devontae Graham was terrific and really had a big, like, hey, it's my senior year, let's do this type of moment. But Vick was electric. I mean, he's so aggressive. He's so fast. He's so long. There's so many things to like about his game. He showed a pull-up game that was pretty smooth. His three-point shot looks good, maybe better than ever. This is a guy that's just continuing to get better, you know, day after day after day after day. And now that he's a junior and he's got a couple of those, you know, the first 2 years under his belt, the harder years, so to speak, I think nothing but big things are ahead for him. So whether he can be or needs to be the type of guy that Josh Jackson was last year, I think is a little bit irrelevant. I mean, even though they may have to play small, I don't think you'll be talking about playing and replicating exactly what last year did. Number one, they don't have a Frank Mason, so it's, you're asking to do something that's probably not doable if that's the path you take it. So I think they'll find their own identity with it. I think if they have to go small, I think they'll go faster if that's even possible. I mean, last year's team loved to run, but I think even faster with this group. And I think, you know, nobody's going to beat Josh Jackson. That's just not how it works. I mean, that guy was he was so talented and he was so skilled and he was so versatile. But I think the combination of Vick and Svi and Marcus Garrett, even, you know, if those three have to sort of team up and kind of play that spot where they each do it for a few minutes a game or whatever, I think that's doable. I mean, again, neither one of those guys is as individually skilled and talented as Jackson, just on an individual level. But collectively, I think they can team together and kind of hold down that spot if need be, and kind of play the hot hand and play who matches up better and those types of things. So,
well, the only reason I reference Jackson is because the reason why it worked last year is because Jackson could defend the four and he could rebound the four. And with right. Vick, he doesn't have to be Jackson, but he has to do those two things, right? And if he can't,
Good point.
Billy Preston has to come in and be that guy.
Right. Yeah, there's no question. I mean, you could say all you want about LeGerald Vick and his offensive game, like I've done already. but the key for him will really be there on the glass, on the defensive end. He doesn't have to stop, you know, the 7 foot center from Baylor. I mean, he doesn't have to do that like Josh was able to
right.
do, but he does have to hit the glass. He does have to be a guy that you notice on the defensive end. And he should be, he's long, he's athletic. He can leap. I mean, he should be able to hit the glass. He should be able to alter shots. He should be able to at least be a guy you notice on that end. And so, right. Yeah. You're like you're saying, you don't need him to be Josh Jackson, but you need him to do Josh Jackson type duties, and I think he can, and I think he will. I can't say it enough. I've written it a few times. I've probably said it a few times already today. I mean, I just can't say enough about how high the ceiling is for Vick, and not just, you know, for the rest of his life or career or whatever. I think this year, I think he could have just an incredible jump and be one of the better players in the country. Really, I mean, he's got so many things going for him, and he's got such a great opportunity to play for a coach that's going to let him do that and you know, play to his strengths and let him have some freedom to go be as good as he can be. So, yeah, I think he'll be fun to watch. And And Preston, like you said, I mean, that's he in so many ways is the real key to this team. I mean, if he can develop to their satisfaction, even just, you know, enough, then I think they've got a chance to be really, really good. If he's a guy more like a Sheck Diallo or a Cliff Alexander or a Kelly Oubre the first half of his freshman year, if he's one of those types of guys where they're just constantly fighting it and struggling to feel comfortable and to look comfortable and to adjust to what the coaches want, and if it's just one of those headache things, then you know, it's a different team, it's a different season, and they'll have to figure it out from there. But his body, his length, his ability, man, he looks so freaking intimidating and menacing. I would not want to match up with him. If he can somehow find that gear, the Josh Jackson mentality, you know, I mean, just that absolute dog mentality where you're just going to lay it on the line every possession and compete your face off and nothing else matters to you but that moment. If Preston can even approach that, they'll take whatever they can get out of that, because that's so much or so often the key is just playing with that right mindset and that mentality. And if he does that, all those physical tools that he has will just sort of fall in place and kind of follow and inevitably lead to good things.
I don't see a way in which, regardless of what you think about him or what you think his ceiling is or how much he should be utilized, I don't see a way in which Mitch Lightfoot doesn't play a pretty significant role in this team as well, simply because you can't get through a year with only two big guys, whether you're playing small or big. Like, he's going to have to play significant minutes for this team.
Yeah, he will. And we talked about this yesterday on our KU Sports Hour podcast, which was the first time I'd really thought about this. It's online now, and it's kind of fun, but I'll give you the gist. Basically, you know, Mitch Lightfoot was told at the beginning of the summer or after the season that one thing that would really benefit him and the team is that if he could find a way to develop an outside shot, if he could be a little bit of a stretch 4-2. You've got all these guards, all this athleticism. Let's see if you can extend your range and keep things open on the offensive end for the rest of those guys to do their thing. And so he went to work, man, and he took probably 400,000 jumpers a day and developed his shot and was having some success with it. And, you know, early morning, 6 a.m. shooting, after school. Well, he did it at his high school a lot back in Arizona. So after their school, you know, going back to the gym and shooting another bunch of jumpers. And, you know, the guy really, really spent a good chunk of this offseason working on that skill. Well, that's great. And I don't doubt that Mitch Lightfoot probably is a better shooter today than he was 6 months ago. But he's still not going to be a guy that you really need out there to take a bunch of jumpers. We've seen it. In Italy, he struggled. He didn't make very many. Just the other night, even in the scrimmage, he had a couple that just didn't look great. One got blocked. I mean, it's a little bit slow still with that release. So, you know, he's going to have to learn that after spending 3-4 months of just thinking offense, he needs to get back to what he really should be focusing on, which is rebounding, garbage points, you know, toughness, just doing every little thing you can while you're on the floor to make an impact. Because the reality is he's never going to be better than the fifth option offensively when he's on the floor. So it's great that he tried to do that. It's great that he spent the time and put the effort in and put the hours in to improve and advance his offensive game. But he needs to quickly realize that, hey, this offensive thing, while it's nice and maybe it can be gravy for me and my team, where I'm going to make my money is hustle points, using my athleticism to grab a couple of offensive boards a game, being as tough as I can on the defensive end. I mean, that's where he's going to have to go. And the parallel that was drawn on our podcast that I hadn't really thought about was, if you think back to Landon Lucas at the beginning of last year, it was a very similar thing. Landon Lucas, because he was going to be a senior, because he had a chance to have a bigger role, because he had aspirations of playing professionally and possibly even in the NBA, he spent a good chunk of his offseason leading up to his senior year working on his offensive game, post moves, his jump shot, I mean, trying to do as many things as he could to make himself a better offensive player. When the season rolled around and they're in Honolulu playing Indiana and they're in New York playing Duke, And you know, it's go time. So he's out there trying to do all these things that he's not supposed to do. And that's not to say he didn't get better, and that's not to say that he doesn't deserve a lot of credit for working on those things, but it wasn't him. And it wasn't the Landon Lucas that KU basketball needed him to be. He figured it out after a short period of adjustment and things like that. And then he went on to have a monster senior year and was as good as anybody has ever seen him. So I think there is a parallel there, and I think that if Lightfoot could just kind of get hip to that and understand that today, it might help him get closer when, you know, mid-November rolls around by the time they are playing Kentucky in Chicago. You know, maybe he's a little bit better off and trying to be more of what they need him to be, which is probably a lot more like a guy like Damari Traylor or something like that than it is a guy like Perry Ellis or Josh Jackson.
He's Matt Tate. You can check out all of his work in the Lawrence Journal World at KUSports.com. Thanks again, man.
My pleasure. Thanks, Nick.
All righty, that's Matt Tate. I'm Nick Schwartz, Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We'll dive into the audio fun bag coming up later in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll have another edition of Let's Rank Stuff as well. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.